Welcome to the Alcohol Free Life podcast, brought to you by thesoberclub.com. I'm Genuinely Grace. This is for you if you've quit the booze or you'd like to, or maybe you're just sober curious. I'll bring you tips and motivation without any judgment, and there'll be inspiration from experts, quitlet authors, and sober heroes. Hi, and welcome to the podcast. I hope you're having a lovely weekend. Well, the sun finally here, right? After all this time. It's actually cold in the week. What was that about? But yeah, it feels like it's might possibly be summer. You can probably hear the birds tweeting because I've got the door open as I record. So this weekend we are doing our sober coach training. So super exciting. I just absolutely love doing this work. If it's something that interests you at some point in the future, then get in touch. Let's have a chat. But I'm really looking forward to the experience this weekend, just working with people who want to support others in their sober journey. And it's been really good fun in the Sober Club Facebook group this week. We've had so many interesting discussions, and one conversation that came up was just this thing about how our thoughts kind of run away with us. And you will have heard me say this a million times, but you know, when we're drinking, it's almost as though we are our thoughts. Our thoughts become us, and that voice in the head that says, you know, oh, just have another one. And even though you've had, you know, half a bottle, for God's sake, just have another one. Or, you know, you want it. Just that nonsense that goes on, the addictive voice, as Jack Trimpe called it. You know, Jack Trimpe, the author of Rational Recovery, probably read about that if you've read my book Happy, Healthy, Sober. I thought it was great when I actually realised that there is such a thing as the addictive voice, and of course it's our own thoughts convincing us that that something is well, not the truth. So in the Sober Club Facebook group this week, I was just asking how everyone was getting on and how everyone was feeling. And I often say, you know, all emotions are welcome. So although our group is totally non-judgmental, full of positivity, it really is. We've got so many wonderful things going on and so many people feeling great. Of course, we have to acknowledge that some people are on day one or they're a few weeks in and, you know, they're not feeling so good. And all emotions are welcome. They really are. And we have to be willing to feel all the feels and all of that. So anyways, one member said, it's my 150th day sober today. I can't believe I'm doing it because I don't believe in what I'm doing. ... And so, of course, a couple of people, you know, said, well, congratulations on 150 days. And I said, I'm not sure what you mean about not believing in it. And the answer was, well, in my head, I'm planning my first drink. I thought, wow, I was so grateful to this member for fessing up, for sharing that. I remember that. I remember that from many years ago when I stopped drinking for a while. I'd stop for a while and maybe I'd start to feel a little bit better. Ooh, drop a few pounds in weight. Ooh, start to look a little bit glowing. But in my head, I'd be planning my first drink. I'd be planning it. If I ever did dry January, you know, I'd be getting to the end of January and planning the first drink, looking forward to it. And this is such a big thing when you're first ditching the booze. And this is why I, well, number one, won't let anyone say giving up, because you're really not giving anything up. You're only gaining. And number two, the importance of that exact piece to focus only on what you're gaining. So I commented and said, you know, I suggest that you look back to our course. We have a course within the Sober Club called Get the Buzz Without the Booze, which really helps you answer a few questions about your own reasoning for wanting to do this. You might have to actually tell yourself a few truths. And I also suggested that this member watch some of our videos in the member portal. We've got lots of amazing videos around the logic piece around alcohol. William Porter has contributed some pieces for us, and there's some other stuff. And I said, just be super clear that you know the truth about alcohol rather than the glamorizing of it. And that's it, isn't it? It's that glamorizing piece. But I did say, you know, it's good that you've noticed it, because now you can challenge it. Once you've noticed those thoughts, you can challenge them and see if they're true. Is it true that that first drink after not drinking for however long will be, you know, wonderful? Well, I doubt it. I also asked this member to think, what would she miss about sobriety and exactly what is it that she'd be looking forward to about drinking. So really answer those questions honestly, you know, rather than just from that haze of the, it's that expression, isn't it, the fading effect bias, when we look back with rose-coloured spectacles. We look back and we go, oh, wasn't it lovely? Wasn't it glamorous when I was drinking? Was it hell? We don't remember the lion in the gutter piece, the waking up at 3 a.m. with the heart pounding piece, the hating ourselves piece. We don't remember that. We just go, oh, wasn't it lovely in the sunshine, you know? So anyways, I wrote that back. And her answer was, you're right. I stopped listening to podcasts, stopped reading about it, stopped connecting, so I'm running on fumes. And I will try and do what you've suggested before I convince myself that that first drink will be great. I know it won't be. I do think that I might have one now and again, but I know that will be a lie and I will miss feeling 100% healthy. Isn't that interesting? So when you just get challenged on these thoughts, actually, you know, when you ask your body, what is the truth? You do know. You do know that you won't be having one drink. Of course you won't. If you're someone who's come this far, if you're listening to this podcast, if alcohol is a thing for you, you probably don't have an off switch. And you're kidding yourself if you think you're going to have one. You won't have one. You'll be right back down that slippery slope again, at least at some point, you know. So I was very grateful to this member for kind of for raising this, because I know it will help other people to see, you know, this piece about thinking it's glamorous. Oh, looking forward to having one. There is nothing glamorous about alcohol. There is nothing to gain, nothing at all. And if you're unsure about that, do go back and listen to some of these podcasts. Of course, I'd love it if you join us in the Sober Club. Please join us in the Sober Club. We've got so many amazing interviews and videos and just so much material in there. But listen to the podcast as well, the great podcast that I did with Dr. Anya Toppy-Waller, the senior lead clinical researcher. That was just so hard-hitting about the reality of just one drink. Really hard-hitting. And that was an interview that I thought was going to be, you know, I thought that she'd caveat it all, well, but we're not sure. No, not at all. Very, very hard-hitting. And, you know, it was very powerful, that podcast. But anyways, so if that's you right now, and there's a little voice in your head going, oh, well, I'm going on holiday in a few weeks, all the sun's shining, and wouldn't it be nice? I could just have one. And when you start planning, just put in the pause and challenge those thoughts. Will it be nice? Will it be nice for a few seconds, maybe? Will it be nice the day after? How will you feel about yourself? And what exactly will you be gaining? What will you be gaining? If the answer is, well, I'll be able to sit in the sun with a glass of something, well, you know, I've got news for you. There's plenty of ways you can do that, right? That don't involve toxic liquid. Yeah. So I challenge anyone to give me a really good reason why drinking might be a good idea. I'm very happy to have that debate. So bring it on. I must tell you about the event that we have coming up. I mentioned it last week. It's the tickets are now on sale and they're going to sell out real fast. It's Tuesday, August the 15th in London at the Club Soda tasting room and bar, and in the evening. And it's going to be super good because it's going to be a meetup and a chat with everybody. And my special guests are the guests who were my first guests on the podcast, because incredibly, it's going to be coming up to around 250 episodes when we do this live recording. I can't believe it. 250 episodes. I mean, what the hell? Incredible. So anyways, it's Tuesday, August the 15th. We're going to be doing a live podcast recording. And my special guests will be the very guests who were on the first few shows. So we have the fabulous William Porter, author of Alcohol Explained. We have the fantastic Claire Pooley, author of The Sober Diaries and, of course, The Authenticity Project. And also Laura Willoughby, who is just so incredibly inspirational and, of course, is the co-founder of Club Soda and now the creator, the founder, the owner of the Club Soda tasting room and bar. So the ticket includes a free drink, and the cash bar will be open as well. The venue is quite small, so it's going to be snug. So get in quick if you are interested. If you go to thesoberclub.com/events, so go to thesoberclub.com, click on events, or click on the show notes to this episode and that will direct you to get your tickets there. And then a few days after that, we have Sober by the Sea, and that really is a very tiny group where we focus on what it is you want for your life moving forward. We create a vision board. You do not have to be a Sober Club member, and it doesn't matter if you are not sober. Don't drink that day. Obviously, but it doesn't matter. You can be sober curious. You might have been sober for years and years. Doesn't matter. We look at what it is you want. And it's a really powerful day, really special day. So that's Saturday, August the 19th. So again, go to thesoberclub.com and click on events. And while we're talking events, we've got a couple of tickets to give away to the No Booze Cruise. And voila, my guest today is Matt.
Well, I'm absolutely pleased we got it together at last. I get to chat to Matt Pink. How long have I been trying to set this up, Matt?
A long time. I feel like it's been, I actually genuinely think it might have been years. That's what I'm going
to
say.
Yeah, it's crazy. I know, it's amazing. Anyways, it's fantastic to finally chat to you. And there will be people who aren't yet aware of your amazing stuff as the Better Life guy. So do you want to just take us back in time? Let's hear a bit about what life was like, you know, before. Tell us all.
Better Life guy, cool. That's a long old story, but it's a long answer. I'll try and keep it quite brief. But yeah, essentially before Better Life guy, before I started to stop drinking 3 years ago, I was in the fashion industry in central London, and that was sort of my passion. I fell into that after school and ended up doing all right at it. And I loved the fact that it was in the West End and all the glamour and the fashion shows and the champagne and the bits and bobs that come around the other side of that as well. Mm. And yeah, I loved it. And I was getting free clothes. I thought I was living the dream. And over a period of time, that wears thin, that lifestyle. It wears thin quite quickly because it's pretty extreme. I don't think I really realized how extreme it was until I've come away from it. But I went through quite a tragedy in my own personal life in 2013. I tragically lost my son. And that was a bit of a turning point for me, because I would say before that I was pretty regular in terms of a drinker. After that, I definitely had to lean on that a bit more, and that kind of escalated quite quickly. So following a couple of years following from that, I just hit it quite hard, and ended up discovering some sober people online, notably Andy Ramage. He was the first guy. I saw a podcast he did with Rich Roll, and I was like, he was talking about people giving up drinking and doing it for the sake of their health and wanting to be better and wanting to talk about ambition. And I was like, wow, people actually give up drinking
without choice.
I could not believe it. And then, yeah, one thing led to another with him, followed him. Lockdown came round, and I'd taken a few breaks from the booze, like maybe a week here, 2 weeks there. And I thought, this is great. I feel amazing. And then, yeah, lockdown came around, and I thought, this is my opportunity here to get out, because it's the pubs and the clubs and everything's shut down. I'm away from it all. So I thought, well, at least I can have a good run at it. And then ended up, that was it, April 21st, 2020. Here I am today.
Amazing. Amazing. It is interesting just picking up on that one little piece, you know, that when you're caught up in all of this, you know, because I was exactly the same when I was caught up in it all. I had no concept that there might be people that would, you know, that would choose to stop drinking, because we just have this inbuilt kind of wiring that the drinkers are the people that are having fun, that it really is the answer to the, you know, whatever's going on. And so to think that someone would choose to do that rather than it being a hardship, it's just really hard for us to overcome the beliefs, isn't it? The neural pathways that tell us that.
It is. And I was just literally writing my newsletter this morning saying the same thing, like, easy choices, hard life. Hard choices, easy life. And I think that's one of the things I live by, because what in the UK now, it's Friday, it's sunny, it's the start of June. If there's ever going to be a time to go and sit in a beer garden, pop a bottle of Prosecco at the end of a week, you know, it's now. No one's going to bat an eyelid if you did that. If you said to everyone, I'm not going to drink this weekend, people will bat an eyelid still, and they'll be like, why not? It's summer. Yeah. It's the start of the summer. Yeah. And yeah, it's crazy because it still lives. And I think I've seen in my 3 years of sobriety a slight change in the dynamic. I think people are starting to be a bit more receptive to it, but
yeah,
we've still got a long way to go.
We do. And obviously, you know, as we both kind of work in this field, you know, you can, if you're not careful, kind of have a slightly wrong impression that it's more prevalent than, I kind of think, you know, I'm surrounded by people who are stopping drinking or are focused on, you know, having great alcohol-free drinks and, you know, all the stuff that you do as well. But then, you know, a couple of days ago, I was on a plane and it was bizarre actually, because I was on a plane. It was about 7:30 in the morning and the person next to me is ordering Prosecco. Like, it was like an hour and a half flight. Like, what, will you stop? You know, unbelievable, just ridiculous, you know. And then I got off the plane and I got a text asking if I could be part of a TV debate on whether we should have booze on flights. I mean, obviously I couldn't because I was away. But so clearly these things are being talked about. But still, everyone's boozing at the airports. Everyone's boozing everywhere. And, you know, we walk this fine line, don't we, between not wanting to be preaching at people, you know, and evangelizing, because God knows we've been there, done it. But also just desperately wanting to say there is a, you know, as you say in your name, better life.
Yeah, exactly. And interestingly, I had a realization the other day. Last weekend, we were in Vienna. We were in Venice. And I was in Venice Airport and I was thinking, and we'd flown out of Gatwick. And obviously Gatwick, you know, there's a queue to get into Wetherspoons. There's a queue to get into the restaurant. Everyone's getting pint after pint as quick as they can to get to the lounge as late as they can to then get on the plane and then order the drinks and start again.
Yeah,
and actually, when I was in Venice, I was looking around and it was the same time flight we had. And there was, you know, barely anyone drinking, like a couple of people having a glass of wine with some prosciutto, very Italian style. But there was no one really getting on it. It just wasn't appropriate. And it makes me think, and the more, and now I know this as well, because I've worked with so many people that from Europe and they just can't believe it is a UK US issue in the majority. Like, it is, we have got a real culture that is alcohol led versus the Europeans. And I think that's where I keep straddling different positions in this game. Like, 3 years when I first went sober, I was like, everyone should go sober, it's the most amazing thing in the world. And I believe that because I was just trying to share with how good I felt. I've now come to understand that that's never going to happen. And actually, let's look at what is happening. And actually, I do look at the Italians, and I do, when they have a glass of wine with dinner and around with loads of family, I can understand that now. And I'm much more flexible with my thought process. Having said that, there's also a lot of people in the UK, because the way we've been brought up and stuff, that can't actually just have a glass of wine with dinner. And I'm including myself in that. As much as I could dream about that one day, I think that would be a glass would be a bottle, and a bottle would be another bottle, and that would be sort of back to square one. So,
yeah, if you don't have an off switch.
Yeah, and there's definitely an all or nothing culture as well.
I absolutely agree. I mean, I think I've actually come full circle on it. I think now, because I think that I think it's the kind of glamorous associations with sitting down for a meal and having that one glass. But I think that's, in a sense, what keeps people stuck. Because, yeah, if you've got an off switch, that's great. You stop drinking. But still, in your mind, the association is, I was able to get past that miserable day I've had at work by sitting in the sun with my glass of wine. And that's lovely if you can then switch off at one, allegedly. But then, of course, later on, something hits the fan, as you mentioned, you know, horrific, you know, grief, trauma. And then your unconscious mind remembers, oh, here's how I deal with that. And then by then, one might not be enough. That's the thing, isn't it? I think it's those associations where we think that alcohol is the answer, whether it's the answer to have fun or the answer to get you over stress. Actually, the reality is it does bugger all. It does none of those things. That's the really crazy bit.
Yeah, exactly. You're right. And I talk a lot about what I've come to realize is that actually just I'd rather focus on everything other than alcohol. So what I do when I coach people now, and when I, in all of my coaching programs, we sort of barely talk about alcohol. We talk about creating a life for yourself, creating a future for yourself so compelling that there's just no room for alcohol. And that's how I live by now, because I know that if I have a drink tonight and it's only Friday, that's fine. And, you know, whatever, but I'm not. But the reason I'm not is because I know tomorrow I've got a gym routine that I stick to religiously. Yeah. And I know that I've got an alcohol-free group that I run and I religiously. So I've set myself up in my foundation, so I'm protected from that now.
Yeah, brilliant.
And I'm only getting warmed up as well, by the way. So I just, you know, I've got so many big ambitions that I want to do in the future. So there's absolutely no way that I'm going back to square one. But I have said all along, and I publicly said it all along, that I did say at the start of this journey, I'm going to do it for 10 years, because I feel like in 10 years sober, I can achieve a lifetime of work in that period. That's my sort of target. And then at 10 years, I'll review it. And at the time when I said that to myself, I was like, that's enough for me to get, I can get on now for 10 years because forever is too long and it would scare me. 10 years is enough because I'm excited by what I can achieve in 10 years. 3 years into that, obviously that 10 years is getting closer and obviously the likelihood of me picking up a drink then is very small, but I've still got that same thought process. I still say to myself and flirt with it. I'm like, when I get to 10 years, you can analyze it.
But what might it give you? That's the piece I don't really get anymore, because I genuinely could not. If you offered me many, many millions, I wouldn't drink a glass of wine.
Ever again.
No. I mean, literally, I genuinely feel like that. And yet, if you'd said that to me five and a half years ago, I just would not have believed you. I couldn't imagine getting through a week without drinking.
You're twice nearly as far down the road.
Yeah, five and a half years.
So yeah. I think I'm just hit 3 years. So I think...
Then we'll see what you say at five and a half.
I think you're right, though. I think you're right. That's the way it's going. From 0 years to 3 years, the difference has been, I'm going to drink in 10 years to I'm probably not going to drink in 10 years.
Yeah, so, absolutely. It's amazing. I must ask, so when when we came out of lockdown and you know, you were meeting, you know, socially again, what was the response like of your colleagues and your friends? You know, did you find that difficult? You know, as a young guy, you're obviously you're going to get the sober shamers, aren't you?
Definitely. And that was my whole, and the weird thing is I'd built myself this persona that I was the guy, I was the main guy around town.
Good time, Matt. Yeah.
I was like, lunchtime beers, let's go. If you're not in it, then you're out of the circle. You know, let's drive. I'm driving it hard with whoever wants to come with me. And don't get me wrong, we had a great time. But when I came back and I was, you know, 2 stone lighter, I looked completely different. I was focusing on getting up early and meditating. Just people just couldn't believe it. Left me to it because they thought it was just going to be a little phase. But I was just fortunate the way that it worked out, really, because obviously lockdown in central London was quite tight for a while. It didn't get lifted like the bars and clubs were sort of last to get lifted, and so that gave me a bit more time, and it just gave me an excuse because people weren't just doing it straight away. It didn't happen. London, you know, London was
taken a long time to come back, if you might say it even has. It's still quite dead, isn't it?
It has. So I really rode on that, and at the same time I realized at that point I can't live that life anymore. If I want to be sober, I couldn't do that job, I couldn't do that career. So I started in on other things, and gradually that led me to where I am now.
So did some of your friends sort of naturally, you know, they always say, you know, you don't have to kind of agonize over breaking up relationships. Those people who are not willing to kind of come with you just naturally fall away. Did you find that happened, and then your kind of true friends stuck around?
Yep, exactly. Almost to a T, like what happened. So I'd say probably 25% of my friends disappeared. 25% of my friends sort of weren't sure, and then half of them probably stuck around and they met me for coffees and breakfast instead of dinner and drinks. But what I would say, like years down the line, is virtually all of them have sort of come back in one shape or form, like, which is quite interesting. And now I just see them for, like I said, a coffee or breakfast or everything. Again, just chat, even alcohol free beer now, because I sort of got to the stage now where I'm confident enough to do that. So yeah, I think the short term worry is something I face. A lot of people ask me, as they do you, all the time, I'm going to lose my friends. You sort of are, in a way, and you've got to be prepared for that. But then what you don't realize is a lot of your friendships are based on very fragile ground.
I mean, it's actually crazy when you think about it, isn't it? That friendships can be based on not spending time together, or even in a bar, or drinking, because, you know, the word drinking can mean have a glass of something else, right? But literally, it's based on what you are choosing to put in your mouth. It's totally bizarre. It would never happen with anything else, would it? You know, we can go to barbecues and you can eat meat and somebody else can have something vegan. Who cares? If you're having fun and it's a great barbecue, who cares what's actually going in your mouth? But alcohol's just so emotive. And if you're not getting pissed with people, they think, I don't know, it is just so odd. And you're right, it is the thing that scares people at the beginning. You know, they get worried about what they're going to have to face. And your people that are closest to you can be the worst. You know, I had one client who was really, really nervous about being with her family, you know, and she went back to be with her family. And, you know, she did all the prep and, you know, let them know, excuse me. And then one of her sisters spiked her drink at a family gathering. I mean, wow. Who needs enemies, right?
It's incredible. That doesn't surprise me. Doesn't surprise me.
It's really scary, isn't it?
Yeah.
So tell us about your book.
Yeah, so that was actually one of the things I picked up once I went back to work and I had all this new time and energy, and I was discovered I had a morning and an evening. It was like, wow, I'm going to do it.
I know. Who knew there were 2 6 o'clocks in one day, right?
Yeah, exactly. And I just had this real urge, because I've been through such like crazy tragedy and like gone from sort of living a normal life to living a didn't want to be here life, to then losing marriage and lost my house, and just all like classically went terribly wrong. I sort of bounced back as well, but you bounce back better than ever, really. And sort of had a real urge to share that, because I thought, you know what, if I can bury my own son then get sober and help people, I think that's that might put someone, you know, if someone maybe can't, I don't know, maybe someone's lost their job or something other that's happened that's bad, but it's obviously not as bad as that. That might help them put that into context and go, do you know what he's done? So I thought, I started writing it. I just thought I'd see what happens. And I wasn't very educated at school and opened Microsoft Word and just started writing a book. And actually it just fell out of me.
Yeah,
I was so surprised. And before I knew it, I was flying through it. And didn't really know what I was doing. I just had a bit of rough bit of paper that was like drawn out, and then just started writing chapter after chapter after chapter and really enjoying it, find it really cathartic. I was quite emotional at times. I was like crying when I was writing some of it. I was laughing when I was writing some of it. And I wanted to write something that isn't all about alcohol, because I don't call myself the alcohol free guy. I call myself the better life guy, because I get bored talking about alcohol. Like I said, I want to talk about exciting things. And in my book, I didn't just want to talk about alcohol. I want to talk about the other stuff as well. So I wanted to talk about what I'd done and how it can help you. And so I called it Better Me, Better You. And I'd sort of broken it down into the key components that I've lived by. So it starts off with my story about roughly about what happened in my life, all the good and the bad bits and the fun bits. And some of it's funny, some of it's sad. And then it goes into essentially what I did to recover or get to where I am now. And then it talks, but like I said, so it'll be like meditation and it'll be Better Me. So I'll talk about what I did in my meditation journey, how I thought it was just a load of nonsense. And then I started doing it and I was like, wow, this is pretty good. And then it's Better You, which is okay, meditation. If you want to give it a go, this is what you need to do. Break it down into the easy first steps. And then it's got bullet points after that as well. So it's really easy to sort of pick up, put down. What was that about meditation again? Pick up and put it down. Because I don't know about you, but whenever I write, read books, or highlighter all over them and notes, and it's hard to go back to, whereas my book is simply written by someone who is quite simple and direct, and it sounds like me, and it's very easy. And again,
so it's dippinable. I love that.
Yeah, I like that. I never heard that before.
Dippinable.
it did well to start off with, and then it sort of tailed off a bit. And then recently this year, for some reason, I haven't done any marketing, or it's just sort of suddenly have another
picked up burst. Again, yeah. Well, I think when you first start to think about ditching the booze, or you maybe in the first few weeks, I mean, I was ordering so much quickly. I didn't even tell anyone. I literally didn't even tell my family that I was stopped. I felt such a sense of guilt. It's bizarre, I know, but I did. But that was the only thing that kept me going. I just kept ordering quickly. I mean, they must have noticed the delivery driver turning up 3 times a day with yet another book. But it literally kept me going. That and podcasts was, you know, because literally all of life is there. And it is that thing, as you say, of, well, if somebody else has been through it, you know, potentially much worse, and they've come through, then, you know, maybe there is some light at the end of the tunnel. That's it, isn't it? You must be really proud that you've helped people.
Yeah, I am. And that was only the start of it, really, because that came out quite early. But then my Instagram came out as well. And then I learned that I did Andy Ramage's coaching course and sort of became a coach and sort of doing my, I'm still sort of finding my way with that, because my style is quite different. I think naturally my style is quite different to what you'd classically call a coach. And I find myself better in bigger numbers. I always sort of have done. I prefer to speak in a room of 100 people than one. And likewise with the coaching, I like doing group coaching rather than one, but I still do one, and I find it very rewarding, but I do less of it. So I'm still on that journey myself, just to figure out what that looks like.
And then you do these fantastic events. So tell us about your event coming up, which I really hope I can come to. Because you did something similar last year, right?
Yeah, this is the third one. So it started off 3 years ago when I wanted to do an event on the back of COVID. You know, everyone was starved of connection.
Yeah, exactly.
And I was like, let's do an event. And I thought, you know, I'm a bit all or nothing, as you can tell. And I thought, rather than do a little meetup, let's hire a boat and go down the Thames.
Yeah. Oh, that's so brilliant. You're the complete opposite of me, because that's exactly what I want to do. But I'm terrified of taking a risk. Like, oh my God, what if nobody buys a ticket? that's brilliant.
There is that. And, you know, I think the thing with it is it's a bit scalable. So I hired a boat for 100 people, and I had to get about 50 people on it to pay for it. And I thought to myself, come on, you can get 50 people. Like, and I thought, even if I get 30 and I have to swallow the cost. So I sort of knew that was a fairly low risk. And then once I did that first one, it sold out. I was like, oh, brilliant. And so I just did the next one. I just did 150 people in a bigger boat.
That's fantastic.
And then this one's the biggest ever boat. So I've got 250 people this time.
Amazing.
And it's, on 24th of June. So I don't know when this episode will go out.
Oh, it's 24th of June. Okay.
Yeah. Is this going to go out before that?
Yeah. Absolutely. So,
so
next week, we'll put it out next week.
There you go. So you might still get tickets. There's still 44 left, I think, last time we checked.
Fantastic. So what happens? We just sail up and down the Thames, do we, and drink alcohol-free drinks?
This is the thing, because, again, I didn't want to go and meet in a bar, because I thought that's like sort of what we're trying to get away from. And I thought also, how am I going to, because you know what price is like in central London? You ring up a bar and say, can I hire it? They want a couple of grand.
Oh, God, yeah, absolutely.
How are you going to make that work with alcohol-free drinks? And then how are you going to sell tickets to that as well? Because who's going to come to... It's all right when it's a bottomless brunch and it's alcohol. Everyone's coming all day long. But if you're not even getting drunk, who's coming to that? So I thought, what can I do that's actually a thing as well as meeting? So the boat was actually... And also it got away, it got around the sort of bar charge as well, because you can bring your own drinks to it. And then I could work with my own drink partners, etc. So the idea is it's 49 quid. It's you go up and down the Thames for 3 hours. There's a live DJ that plays on board. If it's sunny, it's so good. It's just such a buzz. There's a sun deck. There's a quiet deck. There's all you can drink, unlimited beers and alcohol-free cocktails and fizz. There's also unlimited food. So there's food there as well. There's like some guest speakers and stuff. So it's a mixture of everything all in sort of a 3 hour package.
Amazing.
It's an all inclusive ticket. So I think for that price, even, you know, even the boat trip in London, if you get two people on an Uber boat there and back to Greenwich is 40 quid.
Oh, that's brilliant. Yeah, what a fabulous, fun idea. I mean, it really is the case, isn't it? That the people who are starting out and they think, oh, I'll never be able to have fun again. You know, absolute nonsense. You'll have way more fun. Because, you know, people who are sober are really nice. Did you find that? Don't you find that? I really think that when you stop drinking, you become like the best version of yourself. So people become much more kind. You're much more kind when you're sober. If literally it would be a different world if everyone was sober, that's for sure. Because it just takes off that layer of, I don't know, that's that kind of layer of grabbing that people have when they're drinking. It's that sort of selfishness, and a lot of that goes. And so just people just are really nice. That's been my experience.
Definitely. And I would like to say that I wonder often whether everybody is actually really nice. It's just that
exactly that. When you get back to who you really are, the core of who you really are. Yeah, there's always so beauty there, isn't there? Brilliant. Yeah. So, just give us your website then, Matt, where we can get the book and, you know, and obviously tickets for this.
Yeah, so you can get them either through the Dry app, which is obviously mine and Andy's app, which we co-created last year, or you can get them at betterlifeguide.com.
Brilliant. Fantastic. Well, thank you so much. And I look forward to seeing you and really hope it all goes well. And all the best for the future with all your amazing endeavours. And presumably you'll have another book soon, will you?
I think I'm going to have to. Yeah, I've got it. I'm like, why am I doing this? I know how painful it is, but you know, you've written a book, haven't you?
I've written five. I've written one on sobriety, but I've written five books in my time. Yeah.
There you go. You know the bug, don't you? It's a weird bug.
It is weird. I mean, writing your first one is like mega exciting. It's like having a baby, isn't it? You kind of get that in your hands. It's really amazing. But I do think books are just super powerful, really super powerful. Even now, even though everything's online, there's something about holding a book that it's different. It is.
Definitely.
Yeah. Well, well done you. It's brilliant. Well, it's fantastic to chat to you. I love it. I love everything you're doing and Yeah, well done you. It's really fab. Really, it's a really fantastic energy. And it's great to have loads of guys out there doing this stuff as well, because, you know, a lot of women go down this path and everyone kind of thinks, you know, the amount of women that say to me, oh, God, yeah, but I don't know what I'm going to do because my partner, you know, there's no way he'll ever stop. It's like, well, never say never. Crazy, you know. And then often what does happen is one partner shines a bit of a light on it all. And then before you know it, the other partner is interested in all of that. What about your partner? You know, how did that pan out?
So my wife gave up with me when I gave up, but she started drinking again in like very small doses a few months ago. Just she was at mm-hmm. a Hindu and she just had a few, but she's completely different to me. She had a few on a Hindu, she had a few at a birthday, she had a few at another Hindu, and she's going on a Hindu again in a few months, and she's going to have a few. And she can just do that.
Other than that, she probably doesn't even think about drinking.
She hasn't even mentioned it.
And I'm like, people are like that. Yeah. They're the true, in my opinion, they're the true mindful drinkers when it's not a thing for them. You know, I sometimes joke, you know, I'm a mindful kiwi fruit eater, you know, because I might have two kiwi fruits if there happen to be some in a fruit bowl, but I ain't going to join a group about giving them up, you know, and I might not even think about kiwi fruits for 3 months. So that's a true mindful drinker rather than someone who's stressed about, oh my God, well, shall I have two today and none tomorrow? And that just becomes stressful, doesn't it? Far easier just to not have any.
Yeah, and she doesn't have it in the house, which isn't, and I've actually felt relieved since she started again, because I felt a little bit like I was holding her back, and I think she's almost done me the legwork. We've done the first few years together, like, thank you very much. But she's not, you know, it's Friday today, she's not popping a bottle of Prosecco today. She just won't bother. She'll either have alcohol free or she won't.
Yeah, exactly. Brilliant. Thanks ever so much, Matt. I really appreciate it. And we'll talk soon.
So I can't wait to join you on the No Booze Cruise. I'm going to be speaking and we've got a couple of tickets to give away courtesy of Matt Pink. So if you go to thesoberclub.com, click on events, you can enter our prize draw and maybe be in with a chance of winning a pair of tickets for that event on Saturday, 24th of June, or it'll be in the show notes for this podcast. So just another reminder, if you go to events, there are the tickets there for the event on Tuesday, August the 5th. 15th, which is the live podcast recording with special guests, and then Sober by the Sea on Saturday, August the 19th, which is in sunny Southend. Very limited tickets for that. Whatever you've got going on, stay connected. You know, I mentioned at the beginning of this podcast somebody in the Sober Club who'd shared those innermost thoughts, and that's just massive, because once you get the thought out, it starts to lose its power, right? Which is why journaling's so helpful, actually writing stuff down. When it's just you in your head, it all starts to feel really important. But when you actually share it, then other people can go, oh, I'm not sure that's quite right, you know? So it's really worth being connected and held accountable. So do check out The Sober Club. It's very low cost. It's very high value. TheSoberClub.com. And if you join for a year, you get a couple of months free and a free motivational coaching call. I mean, seriously, what's not to like? But if The Sober Club isn't for you, but you would love to support this work, I would be very grateful. It is my absolute passion, my passion project. So you can go to buymeacoffee.com/Janie Lee Grace and buy me a coffee, or let's meet up and you can buy me a coffee. That works too. So I'm off to have a fantastic weekend doing my sober coach training. And if that's something of interest for you in the future, our next one is October. So drop me a line. Thank you so much for listening to this podcast. I honestly can't believe that it's coming up to 250 episodes. I mean, just incredible. I mean, I know I've been, you know, at it and I haven't really taken a week off. But even so, that is a lot of episodes. If you're new to it, you've got some great fun kind of going back over the episodes, because we've really had some just awesome guests. I'm so grateful. Thank you again to Matt Pink, my guest today. And if not before, I will see you on that booze cruise with Matt. Thank you so much for listening. Follow me on social media at Janie Lee Grace. Stay connected, and I'll see you same time next week. Thank you for listening to the Alcohol Free Life podcast, brought to you by The Sober Club. Please rate and review. And if you want support, accountability and inspiration, and you want to live your best life without the booze, check out thesoberclub.com.